Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Ministry Along the Way Radio. My name is Demetria, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tanyelle. Tanyelle?
I am here. Hello, everyone. Happy Tuesday.
Yeah. How are things going so far?
Things are going great. Can I mention that someone just had a birthday?
Okay, you can do that.
I just mentioned it.
Okay.
I didn't say who.
Yeah. Well, I'll go ahead and pick up there. It was me. I'll solve the mystery. Yeah, I had a great birthday this past Friday. It was a great day from start to finish.
Yeah. Well, from me and also the listening audience, we want to say happy belated birthday.
Thank you. I love the celebration continues, huh?
Yes, it does. You can own the entire month of March. So what are we talking about today? What'd you say?
I'm all for that. I said I'm all for that. I'll take the whole month of March.
Yeah. So now what are we talking about today?
We are continuing the conversation from last week. We talked about the road to recovery, one man's story. And so this is part two. And we're just going to do a little recap, and then we'll get back into the conversation with our special guest tonight. So,
okay.
Again, just to let everybody know, we are in different locations for this conversation. So, it's a little different. I'm kind of, you're tossing me cues to, go break and everything, because you are actually going to be there with our guests, and you can read that better than I can.
Yes. So we'll make it work. We will make it work.
Yeah.
So like you just mentioned, this is part two of the discussion we had on last Tuesday when we were kind of like, shedding light on the issue of sex addiction. And so we do have a special guest with us, and he will be talking to you all in just a second. But before we get started with that, I know, Demetria, you being the technical one, because I am not, do you want to tell folks how they can listen and also be a part of the conversation if they want to call in and place a comment?
Yes, of course. If you want to call in and be a part of our conversation, you can dial the telephone number 347-637-3604. You can listen in on your telephone, but if you want to be part of the conversation, you can press the number 1 after dialing that phone number, and I'll see you on the switchboard and know that you want to talk with us. Another thing that I want to tell you is you can follow our show. You can follow Ministry Along the Way Radio. You would just create a login on Blog Talk Radio. Create your login name and your password, and then choose follow on our show. And you'll be able to get the messages, the little reminders to let you know that the show is coming on. And you'll be able to join us in the chat room once you do that. We did have a guest or two in the chat room on last week's show, and I was kind of excited about that. So I'm looking forward to that again this week. So once again, you can follow the show by creating a Blog Talk Radio login and following our show. And now we can tell you, it looks like we have a guest in the chat room already.
Cool. Yes, we can carry.
Welcome.
So as
welcome.
We said, today we'll be recapping the issue around sexual addiction. And before we get on with our guest, I just would like to reiterate that the purpose of this segment, the purpose for us even asking the guest to come on and be so brave, because he is courageous in coming on is to talk about his life with us. But the main purpose, which is shed light on the issue with the hopes of someone being delivered or even preventing someone from going down the same path. As I'm learning to realize, is that sex addiction is one of those other strongholds that sometimes we face in life. So it is our prayer here on Ministry Along the Way that people who are listening understand that this show is not for entertainment, but it is about a story of how strongholds of sin can attack you, but Jesus can save you. So with that being said, I'm just going to hush up, and I want to introduce to you all Michael H., the brave one here with us tonight. And he's going to, again, just share with us some of his story. And first, I want to say hello.
Hello. Hi. Happy birthday.
Hello and welcome. Thank you.
Happy
thank
birthday.
You for that.
Yeah,
and
welcome.
Thank you, and welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me again.
How was your weekend?
It was great.
It was great?
Yeah, I was on a high the whole weekend. I felt like a lot of people who knew me, who attend meetings with me, it stirred up a tremendous amount of conversation. I told all of the guys who I attend meetings with that I was going to be on the air, and lots of them listened. And they had comments, they had requests, they told me how I should tweak things. So it stirred up a tremendous amount of conversation in our SAA community in the city. So and when I told the guys I'd be on again, I said, well, you need to do this, you need to do that. So it was good from that standpoint because these are guys who know me. They share the same dreaded illness, and they were putting in their two cents to tell me, well, since you're doing it again, you need to do a better job of this and that and the other. So I was really, they had listened. Most of the comments were great. A couple were a little negative, but most of the comments were tremendous, and I was surprised that so many guys listened, and I'm hoping that the same thing happened with your listeners who are not part of the SA community, mm-hmm. That it stirred up good conversation outside of, within your listening group.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that it could help someone. So that carried me all the way to today because I was just impressed on how well it was received in my SAA community. And I'm hoping that we can do the same thing again tonight.
Cool. I'm glad you said that because I just said the commentary of our purpose for doing the show. And I'm also glad to hear you say in your own words, your purpose for doing this, because when we talked about it, you really wanted to get the message out and to kind of share your experience with people because you wanted to help. So that's cool. One of the things that we talked about last week, and just want to get right into it, and something you said, and we did get comments from folks that wanted to better understand the correlation between the absence of your father and also, I think you mentioned, having grown up in a strict religious background. You can take either one first, you know, however you want to, but just to get some clarity on what the correlation or what have you learned the correlation is with those two things and you becoming a sex addict.
Okay. Again, first of all, giving all glory to God. So I forgot to say that when I first came on, because he is my Lord and Savior, and he directs my life. That's why I'm doing it. The absence of a father in the home causes a lot of trouble. If you talk to any psychologist or psychiatrist, they will let you know that that's not a small thing. Most people who grow up in a home without at least one parent, they are going to have some problems. A lot of times problems are small and they're able to overcome them. But I talked to a bunch of my guys this past week, and it was amazing how many of them said that that was one of the biggest factors in their becoming sex addicts, and now they're in the same walk I am, trying to straighten out their lives. So it was a recurring theme. A lot of guys said, yep, that my dad wasn't there. My dad was an addict, and he was acting out, and I saw it. Or a lot of guys' fathers were like mine, just pretty much gone. And there were a few guys whose fathers were in the home, but just absent in terms of being available for them. They didn't speak to them. They didn't. One guy, he's a famous football player. His father never went to any of his games. Now he wants to be in his life, now that he's in the NFL. And, you know, that's not great because his dad was never there when he was in Little League or when he was, I forget what it's called for football. It's not called Little League. Bitty ball, whatever. But the point is, his father wasn't there when he was playing on the parks in town or in high school or even in college. His dad waits until the end. So that has caused this guy to have problems, and now he's at a crossroads of whether he accepts his father in his life or he just keeps him at a distance, the same distance his father chose to be at throughout most of his life. But the point is, getting back to the point, that does cause a tremendous void. And as young people, we're always looking to please our parents. Can't get our parents' attention. We can't please them. That leaves a big hole. And some pretty bad things can fill in that hole. And it just so happens that a lot of us guys with that same problem turn out to be sex addicts.
Almost searching for, not almost, you said it exactly, just searching for something to comfort whatever that pain may be. And for you or some of the guys you just explained, it may have been sex. For others, it can be alcohol, it can
right.
be drugs.
That's right.
You know, I remember when you say that back in college, being around some of my friends, and we had a girls' night, and three of the young ladies who were quite promiscuous, they admitted that they were looking for love. Like, they didn't have their fathers in their lives, and they were looking, they were in search of love. And so through that, they were constantly dating guys. They were, back to back, back to back, back to back. And it was something that I didn't understand at that moment, but later on I got it. You know, for certain people, they can deal with things differently. And for those three and for yourself, you know, it was a traumatic experience and you were looking for something to fill the void. Is that kind of
what you're
saying? That is
correct. That's what I'm saying. It's amazing how devastating that can be on one's life. As you mentioned, those young ladies, they were looking for a father because they didn't have the father in their life. So they probably were dating men who were a little bit older and expecting those men not to just be on the same plane with them and love them, but also to nurture them and protect them and to be more than a boyfriend. They were searching for the love from their father that they didn't have, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And so it causes a lot of confusion in people, and it can cause some promiscuity because you're searching for it so hard that you, when you don't get it in one place, you just run to the next place, and you're not paying attention to the fact that you may be dating more than one person at a time, or that you're sleeping with more than one person at a time, or you're just out of control. So that's probably what caused those young ladies to act the way they did when you knew them in college.
Mm-hmm. And Demetria, did you have anything to add with that?
Just to clarify for me, sex addiction looks like sex, but it's not really about the sex, right? It's about that void, that hole in your life, and you're trying to fill it with something. That's
right. It's about something that has set you apart from having the best upbringing, something that has happened to you, and you channel it through sex, some sexual act as a result of you not feeling whole in terms of either missing a parent or having a parent who's an alcoholic or being abused. Something went wrong, and the acting out that you do has something to do with sex.
And also in some cases you mentioned a while ago, or even seeing that behavior perpetuated, it becomes something that you start to emulate. If you saw a mother or a father act out in that way, then you start to perpetuate that same behavior.
Right, that's definitely one of the ways that people can become sex addicts, when they're exposed to it, either by being adult. I mentioned last week that a number of people who are sex addicts were introduced by a friend or family member. I know lots of young men who their introduction to sex addiction is not like mine, but their fathers brought them to a house of prostitution when they were what they might call quote-unquote of age, and gave them the idea that this is how you act. And, of course, their father is married to their mother, and mother's at home, but dad takes them to their first prostitute at age 16 through 18, somewhere in there, and says, okay, here, I'll pay for you. You go in there and you sow your oats. So, I mean, that happens a lot.
Wow.
And that has caused a lot of people to go astray in terms of the way they understand relationships, the way they understand marriage, the way they understand fidelity, the way they understand honesty, and the way they deal with sex. So, yeah, if you're exposed to it in that manner, that can definitely set you up to have some problems down the road.
And that's just like taking your son to his first to the first strip club.
Right.
The first time.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Same type of idea.
Wow. Let's talk a little bit about the strict religious background, upbringing. Tell me about that. What was that like for you?
Okay, I was in a household that was very religious, and I didn't learn the difference between religion and spirituality until I was in my 50s, unfortunately, but at least I did learn it then.
Mm-hmm.
But I was raised in a very strict household. We did not talk about sex in the household. No one sat down and talked to me and gave me the birds and bees lesson, or just how a young man is supposed to act with young ladies in terms of dating, in terms of marriage, in terms of sex. We were just told it was taboo. You weren't supposed to have sex until you were married. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was repeated more than once. I was just told that as a young man, probably one time, and that was it. And I don't think that that's enough of a discussion for a young man or young lady about growing up, especially in this day and age when sex comes at you from all directions. You turn your TV on, you watch videos. I mean, sex is everywhere. Unfortunately, times have changed from when I grew up. The internet was not around when I was a child, and there were three stations. And I'm not saying it to be funny. When I was growing up, TV signed off at midnight on weeknights. And, you know, the national anthem played at 12, and there was fuzz on the TV, and there was ABC, NBC, and CBS. And that was it. So times have changed tremendously. Most people in this country have cell phones. The vast majority, and I do mean most, more than 50% of the population, well more than 50%, pads, tablets, and all kinds of other gadgets that connect them to the internet. And so they're exposed. They're watching videos, and the videos are extremely explicit. So the point I'm making is, with all this exposure, I think that parents need to talk to their kids about safe sex, about sex, about being aware of the choices that they make. And the problem when I was growing up, when you don't talk to your kids, you leave their exposure to be their peers.
Mm.
So then peer pressure comes in, and now you've told your child, at least in my case, and your buddies are talking about sex, and then now you have to make a choice. Well, my dad didn't talk to me about it. My mom didn't talk to me. All he told me was don't do it. And now my buddies are saying they're having sex. So sometimes when you're raised in a strict religious household where we don't have the discussion and we don't talk to kids about things that they're going to be exposed to, it can backfire. And it can cause the thing that's taboo to be the thing that we decide we want to check out and then we don't have resources, and then we can wind up having some problems because we don't have enough information from those who are raising us, those who are over us, those who can give us good advice, and those who we trust and we listen to. So in that sense, that strict religious background, when we're wound so tight and told not to do something, it can cause us to do just the opposite. So I have nothing against religion. I was raised in a religious household, and I'm very spiritual now. So I've learned that it's not about the religion, it's about my personal relationship with my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. It's spirituality. But going back to just that idea of being raised in a strict religious household, that has caused some people to go astray and go awry because they don't have enough information and it's not talked about enough, and then you get the opposite of what you're trying to achieve. And that person may be promiscuous, or that person may be a sex act.
Wow, you said a mouthful. Demetria, with you being a parent, I just want to know, and you can, I'm using you as an example for the parents who may be listening, and maybe you can ask a question or a comment, but how do you feel about what Michael just explained to us just a few moments ago?
Well, I can totally follow what he's saying, not just in relation of a sex addiction, but just promiscuity that doesn't lead down to something as detrimental as sex addiction. But just the curiosity of a young person maybe going off to college for the first time who doesn't have those guidelines from their parents or from whoever was raising them. So I can clearly see how that can help set you on a path of just now you're curious and you're exposed to different things. And so you kind of, dibble and dabble in this, and it just takes you further and further down a road that you were not prepared for. So that's really what I'm hearing. It's just that you're set up and you're not prepared for what life is going to be offering you. So it is a parent's great, great responsibility to have those tough, sometimes very tough conversations with your children all the while they're growing up. And you know at what age to introduce what part of the conversation to the child. But definitely the older they get, you really should, as parents, we should have had some kind of conversation, especially if we're Christians and it needs to be biblically based and sex needs to be put in its proper place. We need to have those conversations or a kid just won't know.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I think, that's what Michael was just trying to convey to us, that you should have those open discussions with your children. So like you just said, you'll prepare them for the real world, and they won't be so caught off guard about certain situations. Can we all agree to that?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm saying. Just like Demetria said, if she doesn't arm her children on how to handle situations, then the world will do it. And then you don't know what little Johnny across the street is going to tell your daughter about sex if you haven't told her anything. Mm-hmm. And then her background comes from his background. And so that might not be so great. Whereas you've had the opportunity as a parent who your child looks up to and trusts to give them some information. You choose not to, then the street will give them some information and some exposure because peers, especially in that age range, peers can be kind of tough.
Yeah, and we can also use that example for drugs and pretty much anything else, right?
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. Okay, that's good. Demetria, did you have anything else you wanted to add before we moved on?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Carry on.
Okay, thank you. So we kind of discussed what were some of the triggers for you personally, and thank you for shedding light on that for us again. We had a caller on last week, and he just was trying to wrap his head around the whole terminology and you know, pretty much thought like most people think. You know, if you're an addict, then you're harming someone else. If you're an addict, say, for instance, addicted to some type of drug substance, you're going out, you're robbing for it, you're selling your house for it, you do all these things that we know are associated with drug addiction. If you're gambling, you know, you're gambling your home away and things like that. Sex addiction, what does that look like? What does it look like to be addicted to sex? If I'm saying that right, like what are some of the symptoms of a sex addict?
Well, unfortunately, the acting out that a sex addict can do is varied and very, very broad. It's about as broad as imagination can get, and as we know, everybody has their own imagination. So I've heard of hundreds of different ways to act out since I've been in this program, and I understand that there are actually thousands, and that's just the way it is. Some of the common ways, of course, are pornography, or promiscuity, but there are as many ways of acting out as you can only think up. I've heard stories of people. One of the ways is people can sit in their car and expose themselves to others. People can look through the window and peer in at their neighbors as they get undressed. People can walk through the mall trying to look up people's skirts. People can, I'm just trying to think of some of the other ways that aren't as common that people think about. But I've heard stories. Oh, people act out in terms of bestiality. People act out with animals. People act out with relatives, which is unfortunate, but it happens. I've heard people come to meetings saying that they had sexual intercourse with their siblings as they were growing up, or with cousins, first cousins as they were growing up. So acting out has a myriad of different ways to show itself. People say, well, what's a typical sex addict? Unfortunately, there is no typical sex addict. It's not like an alcoholic who you know he's going to drink. Drug addict, you know he's going to take drugs. A sex addict can do a lot of different things in terms of their acting out. It's just that somewhere along the line, there is some sexual component to the acting out.
I think that in itself makes it difficult for people to even understand the addiction because it has so many different faces to it.
Yeah.
And I want to applaud you for talking to us about it because you are, acting as the face to the issue. I haven't even heard of it being talked about enough, I should say. And, sometimes we've seen movies like Addiction, and I think you mentioned the movie last week, not being a good ending.
It ended with this woman. She did one thing that was good. She did, throughout the movie, struggle and go to a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And the therapist kept telling her to go to a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And she went to one meeting. She came out of the meeting. Her husband walked in the meeting. She stood up and said, "Hi, I'm Jane. I'm a sex addict."
The movie ended with her being in
as if it's that easy.
Right.
From one meeting. You go to the therapist a few months, maybe 6 months, she went to the therapist, goes to a meeting, she hugs her husband, and that's it. Sex addicts struggle through most of their lives.
Right. We're going to actually get to, in the next segment, the recovery part of it.
Okay.
But just that movie in itself, it also, to me, it brought the attention that women can even be sex addicts.
Yes, women.
And because we always think of it as the man. You know, the man is the seeker. He's the conqueror. He has all the problems. He has all the women. You know, the man is the molester, all this, but it can be the woman as well. And we've seen examples of that with school teachers dating young children in the school, right?
That's right. A lot of that's been showing up recently. All those problems have been going on forever,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of attention has been brought to it recently here in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Two young ladies were prosecuted for the two of them having sex with the same young man.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, that does happen all too often.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, those poor women have problems. Something happened. Their fathers have touched them inappropriately. Something happened
to trigger them
mm-hmm. because that's not normal behavior
mm-hmm.
for them to seek out young men in high school who are at least 5 to 10 years younger than them. not on the same level with them. It's a control issue, and I'm sure there are a lot of other issues that those young ladies have that it exhibits itself in their acting out with these young men.
For some folks who didn't listen on last week, you really opened up a lot to us as well as the listening audience to just give us a glimpse of what your world was like, and it was very chaotic. Just hearing some of that, even being your friend, you know, I'm like, my goodness, I didn't know you were going through most of the things that you were going through. But in your case, 30 women, as you explained,
at the height of your addiction,
right. Toward the end of it, as a matter of fact, right?
Toward the end, last five years.
At one setting, at one time, I should say, in multiple times, like not 30 girlfriends
no.
in
well,
one
well,
year. It
well, no,
been,
at, one point, in,
for
at
mm-hmm.
one point in my life,
mm-hmm.
around 2005, I was involved with 30 different women at the same time. I did not have an orgy
with
30 women. I had a girlfriend I see one night, one I see the next morning, one I see the next morning. Some of these women lived out of town. So maybe 5% of them were not even in New Orleans. But at the same time, I would fly these women into town for their birthday or for a big Saints game or whatever. You know, so I would see them throughout the course of the year. Even the ones who live in our town, they might come in town for the Essence Music Festival. They might come in town for the Bayou Classic. So I was juggling, at the worst part of my addiction, 30 different women, 30 different relationships. So that was the worst. When I went into treatment, at that time it was 11 women that I left behind to go into treatment. So it peaked at 30 and then it dropped down. And my addiction started out with one woman, obviously, and it just grew. So the last few years were the worst.
A lot of deceit.
Oh, yeah, a lot of lying. And
mm-hmm.
I always say that addiction is craziness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're doing stuff that can cause you a lot of harm. Good for you, and you know it's not good for you. And you also know it's not good for others.
Yeah,
you know you're hurting people.
Right, I want you to talk about that because the caller last week was a gentleman, and again, he looked at addiction as something that will harm someone else. But actually, you were putting yourself in harm's way, as well as the people you were interacting with, and not just physically, but mentally. You know, there were broken relationships, people hurt, lack of attention with family members, things like that. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. The caller, he was paralleling sex addiction to, let's say, crack addiction. And he said that if you're going to go and break in your mother's house and steal money and then go buy crack, why won't more sex addicts rape people? Rape is a violent act. It's not as much of a sexual act. It's not someone, as my thoughts of sex walk for 4.5 years and met people, there are a few men who actually, and women as well, who actually will commit violent acts as a result of their sex addiction. But that is not a component that I see in a tremendous amount of people.
And it wasn't in your case.
And it definitely wasn't in my case. But some people, for example, the gentleman in Cleveland who kidnapped 3 young ladies and kept them locked up in the house, raped them when a young lady was a child for him, and of course, they were rescued last year, year before. That gentleman was a sex addict. However, at the very end, he said, I'm a sex addict, and he thought that that would get him some compassion. It didn't, because the problem was, if he had that knowledge, he did not act upon that. He did not try to get any help.
Mm-hmm.
He violated these young ladies for years and years and years and never sought. And so he tried to lean on it as a crutch at the end. So he was actually ignored when he said that, and I understood that, because you can't all of a sudden throw your hands up and say, oh, by the way, I have a major disease that caused me to do this, and I need help. No, that's not how it goes.
Why don't you harm people
so
violently?
He compartmentalized the fact that he had an illness and did not try to help it,
mm-hmm.
and just acted out violently.
Mm-hmm.
So some people do. That is a form of acting out, unfortunately. It's an extremely violent way,
mm-hmm.
but that is not I don't think it's preeminent. I don't think it's extremely common in terms of the way that most people act out. I'm not an authority on sex addiction, but it's not something that, in my experience, and I've been to over 1,000 meetings, and I've met probably 1,000 sex addicts or more. I attend 4 meetings a week,
mm-hmm.
and that's been for 4.5 years. And I've been to one treatment center for 6 weeks, and I've been to one retreat where a number of sex addicts, probably it was well over 100 sex addicts who were there. And I'll mention it later. There is a convention. There is an SAA convention, Sex Addicts Anonymous Convention, that people can attend if they're interested in attending, and it's an extreme. I haven't been to the big convention. When I went to, it was a smaller, it was a regional event. But from what I understand, the convention is, as a matter of fact, a meeting that I went to the other day, the guys asked me to mention it, and it makes sense, because from what I understand, it's a tremendous experience where so many people with recovery are there sharing their stories on a national level or international level.
And you can find that information about the date for the convention online?
Right.
Okay.
And I'll give out those websites that I gave out last week. I can give those out again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another website, that there's a New Orleans website on sex addiction that lists all the meetings in New Orleans. It has contact people. My name and number may be on there. Probably is. Some of us give out our names and numbers. So when people go to the website and say, well, I need to talk to someone, so my name and number is probably on there, but the names and numbers of a lot of people. So there's a New Orleans website, and it lists the New Orleans meetings, and it has New Orleans contact people who can help you if you, after you hang up from this meeting, say, I think I'm a sex addict, or at least I want to go to a meeting, I want to find a meeting. So I didn't give out the New Orleans website last time, so I'll give that one out with the others toward the end. But in terms of, you asked me about what happened with me. My story is just one of just someone who started acting out on a small scale, and it just grew and grew and grew and grew like a cancer, and I couldn't turn it off, and it overtook my life, and I had very significant losses as a result of it, and I still couldn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally hit a wall. I peaked at 30 women, and it dropped down to 11, and my life was total chaos with women because I acted out at my house, and that person left, and another person came. So people aren't as dumb as you give them credit for. A lot of these women started saying, well, yeah, let me sit here 5 minutes,
mm-hmm.
or 15 minutes, and somebody else drives up. So I had people hiding on my porch. I mean, my life was total, complete chaos.
I remember you telling me after we finished the interview last week that one young lady she purposefully stayed, like you said,
mm-hmm.
and on her way out, I think you had you were like, I don't want to see you anymore or something, and she said, oh, they told me how to get you.
Yeah, she actually made the comment that she was leaving, and what had happened was the relationship wasn't working out. I realized I was being used at that point, because what happened was maybe 3 days in a row, she would come by and hurry and say, look, I need some money. I'm coming back, and, you always give me money when we get together. I think that's so great. Can you give me the money now, and I'll be back. Gave her the money. She never came back. So after about 3 days of that, I said, you know what? You're not coming back, and I've been stupid with this because, I really want you to come back, so I'm giving you money, and I come back, so it's over. So she walked away, and as she walked away, she mumbled something under her breath, and she actually said, they told me you were a good trick. And I said, what? And I said, please, come back and tell me what you just said. Do me that favor. And she did. She turned around and she said, well, they told me. She said, it's well known throughout the city that all some woman has to do is show up and walk in front of your place of business when you're coming out to go home. If you don't look at them or try to get the phone number the first day, by the third day you will.
Mm-hmm.
So my name and my personality was out there, and that didn't stop me. For this young lady to say that I was a trick,
mm-hmm.
meaning I was easy. I could be used as a John for women to get money from or whatever else they needed, because I was going to approach them. All they had to do was show themselves to me, and I'm going to take the bait and fall in the trap. And I did that. And I don't know how many times I was set up like that, but this young lady let me know that at least that one time I was, and there probably were a number of times that I was, that people said, oh, yeah, go around his house.
You even had girlfriends that would be with their friends out with you that would pretty much say, yeah.
Yeah, actually, I had a girlfriend that did that, and even then I did not realize how bizarre that was, because she realized I was a sex addict probably between 5 and 10 years before I realized it, and she was running through my money like, I don't even know what term to use, like a hot poker through butter. She actually spent $50,000 in 6 months. The way she was able to do that was she kept me totally confused with the number of women she was sending my way. She actually sent 4 different women my way. Not all at the same time, but, you know, I stopped seeing one of them, she'd send another. So she sent 4 different women my way that I was able to trace back to her that were acquaintances or friends of her, the people she met. And she said, look, go and make yourself known. Go say hi to him at the bar one night. He's going to be at this party. And he'll take you home, and you'll be set for a few months. So I found out later that she had sent 4 different people my way.
Wow.
And it wasn't a mistake. But that's how she kept me confused and kept her hand in my wallet and kept herself taken care of while I was chasing these women. So by her realizing way ahead of me that I was a sex addict and she took advantage of it, you know, it's just like the other story where some girl tells another girl, hey, look, I just finished with him. Hey, you might as well. Look, you need money, you need a car, go. You get.
And oftentimes that happens to a lot of athletes and a lot of wealthy people where they may think that they're in control.
Right, they're not.
Because that's what I'm hearing from you. Like you felt the reason you didn't, it didn't grab your attention because you didn't care. You had money at your disposal.
Money was
so
not,
it was like whatever. And a lot of times those people may think they're in control, but actually the people are using them, and they notice that they're addicted. They notice that they have something that person with the addiction has.
Right.
And then they trade off for money.
Right. In my case, I was so deep in my addiction, I was not paying attention that people were coming my way and told me that. I still didn't stop with approaching women on a regular basis. I was approaching women. Rarely did a week go by that I didn't approach someone, because I always knew I wanted to have someone over. And I think at some point my addiction got to the point where, you know, you got 6 people you're seeing, all 6 of them are out of town, or 3 of them are at different meetings, another one's asleep, and one's unavailable. So I started adding on.
You would pick up someone else.
Just to keep myself occupied.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I just want to, we're still talking about how. I think we're on the break.
No, I was waiting for you to lead us out.
Oh, I'm so sorry, guys, for that awkward pause. I'm not sure. We are so used to being in the studio together. But I just wanted to say really quickly, we want to continue to talk about this portion because Michael was a physician, and he had a private practice. And so he's going to talk a little bit about how did that affect his business. We'll be right back.
Put your hope in me. Take my hand and walk where I lead. Keep your eyes on me alone. Don't you see why we're the only best? Just because you're scared of the unknown. Take my hand.
welcome back from our break. Thank you for staying with us. This is Ministry Along the Way Radio. My name is Demetria. I'm one of the co-hosts.
And I am Tanyelle. Hello. Welcome back.
And let me just give you our phone number once again, and hopefully you'll want to call in and chat with us and chat with our guests. That number is 347. Call in. If you do want to add your voice to the conversation, press the number 1 on your handset, and I'll know that you want to join the conversation.
Thank you, Demetria. We do appreciate that. Just while we were in the break, Michael is getting some text messages from his friends and also people that participate in the program with him, and they wanted to make certain that we mention that even though we're talking about money dealing with sex addiction, that it's also an addiction that a poor person can get involved in. And I think Michael mentioned that on last week, that you don't have to have money to be a sex addict. It just so happened because he did have the funds, then his playground was kind of larger than most, right? But you can also not have the financial means. You can be male, you can be female, and of all ages, color, race. So we're shedding light on, we're talking about his story, and he's also trying to give us insight too on the general issue at hand. So we're trying to do a happy balance here. So before we went on the break, I mentioned that you were a physician, and I just want to say that you will be again pretty soon.
Well, I've been a physician throughout the whole time. I just haven't practiced in a couple of years because of the losses that I.
Correct me. And why did I say you were? I'm sorry, but you are a physician,
okay.
But the license were.
Yeah, I lost my license. I lost and suspended. As a result of my behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the major losses that I had. And, you know, it's weird that the behavior that I was carrying on, it was bad enough for things like that to happen. And because I was addicted, because of the compulsivity of addiction and the fact that I couldn't find a way to stop, I kept on going when danger signs all around me, but that is the nature of addiction, and I subsequently lost my life.
But you're going to get them back pretty soon.
Right, yeah. I've been told that I can have it back. I just have to wait for some paperwork to go through. But, yeah, I lost my license. I lost salary, and I was making a good bit of money. I lost 2 vehicles. I lost my retirement.
What was the biggest loss, the time spent with family?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I wasn't absent.
Yeah.
I wasn't.
Yeah.
I wasn't. I'm sorry. I wasn't. I wasn't present for my family. The biggest loss was that I was taken away from my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Okay.
That's the biggest loss.
Okay.
Because I was in the devil's grip. I was one of his henchmen. I was out there destroying lives and taking souls. I had people, had women doing things that they probably would not have done. I was taking advantage of people who needed money. I was paying some people's children's tuition for them to go to schools. Some women needed cars. So I made sure I found people who were in need.
Mm.
And at the same time, I had them trading off sexual acts to get things that they needed for themselves. And that was not very cool because perhaps, you know, if they had taken on a second job instead of dealing with me, then they could have kept their dignity and not put themselves in harm's way and not taken themselves to a low place in life and been dealing with a character like me who was just taking advantage of them. I wanted the bodies in front of me to play with the same way I would play with a basketball, and that's not good. That's objectification. I'm using a woman as an object for my need, my pleasure, and that poor person, their soul is exposed to the fact that they're having sex with someone who they don't love. They're not in a one-on-one committed relationship with that person. They're doing it so they can get money to pay for their child's tuition. That's not putting them in a good place. So
yeah.
I harmed a lot of people and I harmed myself. And so that wasn't good.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, at any point did you realize or know that this was bad behavior? Did you say, I really shouldn't be doing this to this woman? Did that thought ever go through your head?
There were several times it did, and I still couldn't stop. I'd tell myself I was going to stop, and I'd try, and it didn't last long. My addiction would convince me, and that's the compartmentalization that I mentioned last week. I could justify it. And when I went to talk
okay.
to them, they listed a lot of things that I did, and they said, yeah, a lot of you guys probably said, oh, yeah, I'm helping these people. I'm giving them money to pay for things they can't get. But there are other ways that they could have gotten that same money and taken care of those needs and not had to put themselves in a low self-esteem situation. So that was brought out the first day that I went to treatment. That was brought out that, no, you weren't helping anybody. You were taking advantage of people. So there were times that it did cross my mind, and my addiction took over and said, hey, man, you're helping these women, so just keep going. And so I jumped back in the pool.
Or did you ever say they don't mind? Right.
I said, that's right. They know what they're doing. They're all over 18. They know what they're doing. They're participating in it. So that's compartmentalization. You rationalize and you keep going. So addiction is very cunning, baffling, and powerful. And you it's hard for you to pull away.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a magnet draws you in. And I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying some people out there listening may be in active addiction, and some of this may sound familiar. It's difficult to pull away. You can pull away.
Mm-hmm.
It's better to not do those things.
Mm-hmm.
It's better to have a relationship with God that helps you to avoid those things, you know, get a sponsor, go to meetings, fill your life with things that are much better than acting out. My life is full of things that are so much better than acting out now. I spend a tremendous amount of time now in church, and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm at church 3-4 nights a week. I'm on all kinds of committees and meetings, and, you know, I mean, it's good. I mean, I'm serving a
and
lot,
you are,
but hey.
You are now 4.5 years into your recovery process, is
yes.
that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And will that process ever end, or will this be ongoing from now until forever?
That's a good point that you make. I was in a meeting on Monday with my therapist and seven other gentlemen of group therapy. All of us, we see our therapist individually, and then we see him as a group. And that group therapy helps a lot because we check ourselves. In group therapy, our therapist sits there and doesn't say much. He allows us to tear each other apart when one of us doesn't do the right thing. One of the gentlemen has been in therapy for 8 years. He's going to stop coming to therapy. He hasn't acted out in 5 years, but he's still going to go to meetings. So he's not going to come to our group anymore. He may see the therapist individually every month, every 6 months, but he's not going to come to group. So he's going to scale back some of his treatment. Right, some of his treatment. He's going to lose some of his support because he's not going to be coming to those meetings every week. But he's still going to attend other meetings. SAA meetings are free. Group therapy is not. He's sitting there with a therapist and other guys who see that therapist on a regular basis, and he's paying for that. You can go to an SAA meeting in New Orleans every night a week now. There's a meeting every night now, and the meetings are free. It's like an AA meeting. You stand up, you say, hey, I'm Mike, I'm a sex addict, and I got into this by starting out dealing with one woman and cheating on her and the next and next and next, and you tell your story, and you get support. And the guys are there support you. Meetings last for an hour, hour and a half, and some days, that there's more than one meeting a day. So there's some days you can attend three meetings in that same day.
Wow.
So, and then I do telephone meetings as well. Sometimes I can't make it face-to-face. There's that SAATalk.org website that I gave out last week. It has a list of about 100 or 200 meetings. They're meetings all day. You call in. Just like we're doing on this podcast, you call in. There's a moderator, and you have a meeting. The same way we're doing this. This is similar to a meeting.
So scaling back the question that Demetria asked, just to get some
mm-hmm.
clarity on it, it's basically a personal issue.
Right, each person has to decide how he wants
mm-hmm.
to live his recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at this point, I've seen therapists twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
I attend four meetings a week. And then I'm at church every day of the week. So I have a lot of support. Now, my church is not an SAA meeting. My church is not a therapy meeting. But my attendance at church, I'm on a lot of different committees, doing a lot of different things, and that occupies my time with something extremely healthy. So that, and what we do in SAA, we have something called three circles. And the center is red, the circle outside is yellow, and the outermost circle is green. Those three circles we fill in. And the center of my circle is acting out sexually with women, is seducing women, is flirting with women, is drinking too much alcohol. So all those things I avoid, and that's the red circle. The yellow circle is missing meetings, not seeing my therapist. So when I start doing those things in that yellow circle, which is the middle circle, I may be heading to the inner circle, which is the red circle. My green circle is doing things like this, attending, seeing my therapist twice a week, playing basketball.
So you develop
the church.
You develop mechanisms alert you when you may be teetering back to
that old
behavior.
That's right. And if I find myself in that yellow circle, which is the middle circle, I may be heading towards the inner circle, which is the red circle. So I make sure I do behaviors. I have a checklist of 19 things I do every day. And that's simple. That doesn't take long. Did I brush my teeth? Did I make my bed? Did I meditate? Did I pray? Did I sponsor someone? Did I make a sponsor call? Did someone call me? Did I attend a meeting? Did I do something like this? Did I go to a church meeting? So I check off the things, just something, brush my teeth, make my bed. It might sound simple, but if my life gets disorganized, I don't wash my clothes organized in other areas as well. So that checklist is a way of keeping myself in check to make sure I'm on the right path throughout my whole life, because chaos that happens in sex addiction is chaos in your life. You're not paying bills.
Right.
You're not doing anything right.
That's what I'm saying.
You can get evicted. So
based on how you were
chaos.
Before. Yeah, right.
So your whole life's going to be chaos.
Yeah, you're based on what it was before.
You may cheat on your taxes. You don't pay people for services that they render to you. You know, when you're in active addiction, it's not just acting out. Your whole life. You remember, addiction is going to affect your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
So,
So I hear more structure, basically.
Oh.
And I know you're spending more time with family as well.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And
available.
You're more available. Yeah, because, you mentioned to us sometimes you would even use those women to taxi your mom around sometimes. Like, take mom here, take mom there for me, because you probably was with someone else at that moment.
Exactly. I didn't have time to take care of mom.
Girl,
but I did have some woman who I saw last night who got some money. I said, hey, you want to make some money? More money? Well, I can't come see. No, go take my mom to the store.
But now
really?
You're with mom, so
right.
It's all good. Now it's all good.
Right.
And your family also used to, they tried to do interventions. I know we can't talk about that too much because we're running a little bit out of time, but they did. Your loved ones also noticed the behavior in you, and there were times that they tried to intervene. Right?
Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. Fortunately for me, at the same time that they were going to do this biggest intervention, once before they talked to me, and I ignored them and blew them off. They were actually going to hire an interventionist to come to my home and try to get me to sit down with him and them and map out some way to get sober. And right at the same time that they were planning to do that, I decided to go into the treatment center that I went to for 6 weeks. So it was miraculous. God knows what he's doing, even if we don't. So it just so happened that at the same time that they were about to hire someone, they were talking to this gentleman, and he told them to try to get me to go to the treatment center instead of him coming. So he was unselfish, and it wasn't about him making a dollar, because he could have made a bunch of money coming to my home, and he told my family it probably wouldn't work. He told them it would be better for me to go to the treatment center. He gave them the treatment center's name and number. I called and I went. So he made no money off of that.
Right.
And my life got saved.
Wow.
So he was that much involved that he cared for me to be saved and not acting out. Then the fail with him coming into my home, and he said the chances were like less than 1%, because, again, you're in your home,
you're
in your environment.
Yeah,
right? It's better to go away. And that's what I did. I went out of state to a treatment center and stayed there 6 weeks. And it worked. I have not acted out in a major way since then. I've had a few slips, but that very minor.
Been celibate for?
Celibate for 4.5 years. I haven't touched another woman since my last act out part.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
That's awesome. Awesome story.
Yeah, I couldn't go 4.5 days.
Wow.
At all. Not
wow.
even close.
Wow.
Yeah.
Again, I applaud you. I thank you. I can say as your friend that and I mentioned this last week, that you are much calmer. So I can even appreciate that. And I remember you getting a text message from an old friend as well who acknowledged that she even hears the change in you. And it was someone that you were involved with, but she can hear the changes. She was even overwhelmed, and she applauded you about your bravery and just, you know, telling you to encourage you to keep going on.
Right. Yeah. That person was the person who I harmed the most. She actually attempted suicide when she caught me cheating on her, and I was very callous. And when people would catch me, I would break up with them. Because I had no more use for them, because they'd be looking to see if I was going to cheat again. So if someone caught me, I'd break up with them. They might want to still be in a relationship and hope that I'd change and stop seeing other people and stay with them. And I was very cold and I was horrible. I was not anywhere near the person I am now. I was a very bad jerk. There were words that could be used to me that I earned that. I'm not proud of it, but at least I've turned my life around and I'm not that person anymore. So, yeah, I was pretty bad back then, unfortunately.
Well, you were a cool guy then with a little attitude, but you're even cooler now.
I had a lot of attitude. No,
I'm trying to be nice.
Very nice.
And bring some laughter to the situation.
Very nice.
Because we have managed to be friends for over, what, it's been close to 7 years now?
Yes.
And we even joked about it, because last week I said I wasn't a part of all of that, but seriously, I mentioned that because I wanted you to know that you can have healthy relationships.
Yes, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't back then.
Yeah.
Now I can.
Any final thoughts? Any final comments?
I want to give out the one website that's it's a local website. It's SAA-G as in girl, C as in Charlie, R as in religion, I as in Ithaca, G as in girl. So it's SAA-GCRIG.org. That organization has been around since 1990. It's dope, and that group is Mississippi, Louisiana, and I believe Arkansas. And we get together a few times a year as an intergroup. And we'll have large meetings that'll encompass people from the tri-state area. But that website has all of the meetings in all three states. It has contact numbers for people like myself here in New Orleans, people in Mississippi, people in Arkansas, who are available to sponsor or just talk to someone if they want to know if they're a sex addict, if they want to know where a meeting is, they want to get some reading material. Excuse me. I'll get some websites. You can go and get more information. So, again, that's SAA-GCRIG.org. Again, the organization has been around since 1990. And I just also want to mention that the convention this year is in Washington, D.C. It's the SAA National. It's really international convention. People will attend from all over the world. And it's a wonderful time, from what I understand. I've never been to a national convention. But it's a wonderful time with a lot of sharing and a lot of sobriety and a lot of hope. You know, it's, when you have someone who's working with you and walking a struggle with you, it does help. I've never heard anybody recovering alone. I mentioned that last week.
Mm-hmm.
This is not like AA. Wait, not like alcoholism, where you can go in the room and chain yourself to bed or lock yourself in the room for 3 days and tell your loved ones don't come back there. Just throw some food in the room every few days. And you take a shower, and you might seize, and you shake, and you go through DTs, and if you make it, you know, then you recover. That's not the best way to recover from alcoholism either, but some people have done that. They've done that with drugs. You cannot do that with sex addiction. I've never heard of anybody. You need some help. You need support. You need a sponsor. You need meetings, maybe a therapist, but you definitely need some help. So SAA is out there. The New Orleans group, the regional group is there. I gave out two other websites last week, www.saatalk. It's seven letters, saatalk.org, and then saa-recovery.org. Both of those are excellent websites. The International Service Organization is in Houston, and I have that number. That's the FAA National Organization. And let's see. Yes, here it is. Okay, that number is 1-800-477-8191. Again, 1-800-477-8191. That is in Houston. That's the FAA, Sex Addicts Anonymous, national office that, again, wealth of information. There's some free materials they can mail to you. They have, again, lists of people across the nation and across the world who've given their numbers to be sponsors or someone just to contact. So you can call the FAA, that's the ISO, and they'll be helpful. And, again, I just want to reiterate that sex addiction, unfortunately, I've heard some people tell stories that they started acting out when they were 3, 4, and 5 years old.
Wow.
Some people were touched by their parents and had inappropriate relationships with their father and mother. Some people were touched by other family members. So some people started acting out before they were 5.
Wow.
So this addiction can affect people in all walks of life, all ages. You don't have to have money. You can act out. You don't need anything to act out but an imagination and body parts that work.
Wow.
You don't need money. You don't need another person. So, you know, sex addicts, that's why there's so many different ways to act out. Because, like, you know, you need money to act out with drugs. You need money to act out with alcohol. You don't need money to act out with sex. So that's why it's such a devastating disease. I'll mention it again. I've been in meetings 4.5 years. I've met hundreds of people who've been cross-addicted, and that's not an exaggeration. Hundreds of men and women who've been addicted to cocaine, alcohol, methamphetamine, heroin, and they all say that they were able to beat all of their other addictions and they're struggling with sex addiction.
Wow.
When you meet somebody who's been clean from heroin 5 years or clean from methamphetamine 7 years and they're struggling every day with a sex addiction, that tells you how bad of an addiction it is.
Wow. We just would like to thank you again for coming back with us a second time. You've certainly told us a lot. You've given us a lot of information. Thank you for allowing us to be a part of your recovery process. And, Demetria, is there anything that you would like to say really quick?
I would just like to say thank you as well. And thank you for getting the word out that help is available. It's not going to be easy work. In fact, it's going to be very hard work, but it's going to be worth it to get your life on track. So thank you for coming and sharing your story with us.
You're welcome. I did want to mention one more thing. I was looking through my notes. SAA is safe, and it's anonymous. So a lot of people say, well, I don't want to call there and expose myself to somebody having some idea. No, you only use your first and last name. You don't have to leave a number. You don't have to leave an address. You can just call and someone's going to call you back if you don't want to be called back. You can just get information. It's very safe. It's very anonymous. And you can get some help. And there's also a group called COSA, which is for codependents of sex addicts, just like there's Al-Anon for family members of alcoholics. And COSA is for a wife or husband or children of sex addicts or a family member of sex addicts, a brother, a sister, sibling, a parent who needs support. And it's a support group.
Mm-hmm.
There are actually COSA meetings in New Orleans. There's several where the addicts are not there. Addicts have never had a COSA meeting. It'll be all of the wives of a bunch of guys who are acting out,
mm-hmm.
or some wives and husbands, or some children, some parents of sex addicts, and they meet and they have materials that they read and they do projects where they'll do play acting that'll help them to get through the tough times that they're going through.
Yeah.
So, you know, they won't just meet, but they'll do all kinds of things. They support each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just helpful for them to have a group that can support each other through all of the tough times that they go through. Because remember, you're hurting your loved ones the most. If you're cheating on your wife every night, that's pretty hard. She needs somebody to talk to other than you because she's trying to beat you up or leave you. But if she's got another girlfriend whose husband has done the same thing, but now he's recovered, then that woman can be a wealth of knowledge for her. So that's what COSA is about. And again, just if you have any questions, please call the FAA ISO in Houston or go online and contact one of the groups?
We're actually going to have a clinical therapist come on in just a few minutes.
Right.
So, again, thank you. Thank you on behalf of the listening audience. We really do appreciate you so much. And, guys, we'll be right back. I know you all have a lot of questions. And, again, like I just mentioned, we're going to have someone come on who is a clinical licensed therapist who has experience dealing with folks or individuals who have sex addiction, and he'll be on with us in just a sec. So hang on tight. We'll be right back.
Welcome back from my break. This is Ministry Along the Way Radio. My name is Demetria.
And I am Tanya. Welcome back, guys.
Welcome back. That was a very intriguing conversation we just had with our guest. And I am so grateful that he did come on and share with us. The term you used was brave. I really do appreciate that from him. He was indeed brave. And we are moving on to our second special guest. He is a licensed clinical therapist, and he's there with you now?
Yes, he is. He's on hold. He's on with us right now. And we're going to dive right in. And just for folks who are just coming on, we're actually talking about sex addiction. And, Demetria, I went online today just to kind of look at some more information about this. And I was on the American Family Therapy site, and actually it stated that about 12 million people struggle with sex addiction.
Wow.
And I did not know that. I was completely shocked. Folks have heard some really staggering information from Dr. Hunter and may still have some questions and need some clarification on things. So we thought it would be best, again, to bring in the therapist. So we have Mr. Lindsay on with us. Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you quite well. How are you today?
I'm good. I just wanted to think on what you had just said. Over 12 million, you said?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what I want people to be mindful of is those are the ones, individuals that have reported, just as in sexual abuse, there are so many cases that have never been reported. So that may be 12 million people that have reported or acknowledged the addiction. I would say it could triple that easy because many people don't necessarily, many people may be in a sexual addictive behavior and has not coded it as, it's not been coded as a sexual addiction.
Okay.
So I would say that number is much greater than that.
Thanks for clarifying it. And since you pretty much are segueing us into the question of the hour, what is sex addiction? Can you help us out with that?
Well, think of the concept, because what many programs use is the addiction model, simply meaning it's a behavior that has caused deterioration, distress, vicious life, a behavior that is out of control and has numerous negative consequences to it. We're saying sex addiction, but it's the same model concept that you would use if you said someone had crack addiction or alcoholism. It's still using the same addictive model. So a behavior that causes deterioration in a person's life, they are unable to function after a period of time, because as you probably mentioned with Mr. Hunter, there was times in his life where he was functional, but as the behavior progressively deteriorated, he became more and more out of control, just as it is with most addictions. So the thing that you're basically doing is just putting a label on it by saying sex addiction. It basically uses the same model as any other addiction that exists.
Okay. Can you just tell us how much experience, before we get a little further into this, how much do you have working in this industry?
As a therapist, I've been working as a therapist with sexual trauma and sexual compulsive behavior for 23 years.
Okay. And just wanted folks to know that, so they'll know that basically, you know, you pretty much have some good insight on what we're talking about here. And I have to admit, Michael being my friend, when I first heard about this issue, I was just a little perplexed at first, until, you know, he started to share some things with me a little bit more. Because naturally you would think, oh, that's a guy, he's just sleeping around. And I think most,
right,
you know, a lot of people think that way. Can you kind of just give us some characteristics of a person who may be dealing with such an addiction?
Well, you mentioned an individual that might be sleeping around, and that may be part of the behavior. One of the things that we notice in working with individuals with sex addiction is that, again, it's a progressive deterioration of the person's behavior. Some individuals may start out with forms of sexual addiction by engaging in what we call compulsive masturbation. Some of those individuals could get to the point where they're masturbating 6 or 7 times a day. And you may say, oh, my goodness, that could be physiologically hard on a person's body, particularly with males as well. But the reality is, when you have an addiction, whether it's hard on the body, whether it's creating pain on a person's genital area, the reality is, again, it's an addiction, so they don't have any control to some degree as to how often they're engaging in this behavior. And it may start off with a person watching pornography and then progressing to the point where they've been masturbating to watching videos or watching YouTube or whatever they're watching on the internet, to the point where they're masturbating and getting aroused to that. But then it progresses to the point where the person feels that they need some actual hands-on contact. In other words, masturbation is no longer as eroticizing and as sexually stimulating. So the person gets to the point where they start to need hands-on contact with what they've been masturbating to. And eventually, once it becomes hands-on contact, you start with one person. Before you know it, the individual is now engaging in the sexual behavior with multiple individuals, yet getting that void fulfilled. And so what happens with some sexual addictions is it's sort of like upping the ante. You know, you do a behavior for so long, and after a while, some behaviors become boring to a sex addict. So they're constantly pushing the envelope as to what type of sexual arousal or what type of sexual behavior will provide that sexual eroticism for them. And that's why you have sometimes individuals engaging in multiple sex partners, orgies. Some will eventually maybe get to the point where they're engaging in forms of S&M and dominancy and bondage, what have you, or even to the point where it may involve physical pain to some individuals.
Okay.
The other piece I'd like to say with that, though, is that there's a term we use called sexual reenactment, or another term that we use sometimes called trauma bonding. There are times where people who have been sexually abused, who may become sexually compulsive or addictive, they incorporate aspects of their trauma into their sexual compulsivity, because for some individuals, that sexual acting out, their power and control over a sexual behavior that they had no control over when they were being abused. So
okay.
Some individuals with sexual compulsive behavior might actually engage in sexual reenactment where aspects of sexual trauma bonding, where things that occurred during their sexual abuse, they actually reenact them in aspects of their sexual compulsive behavior because it'll give them a perceived sense of control that they didn't have at that particular time in their abuse.
Wow. Michael shared with us some of his triggers, some things that he has realized in therapy that has was the cause of him becoming a sex addict. And we don't want to blanket anybody's any cause, but can you just give us some examples? I know you just mentioned people acting out because they have been traumatized sexually, but in some cases, not everyone has to have been traumatized, correct, in a sexual act.
Right, right, because and it's not just limited to sexual abuse, because there are individuals that have never been sexually abused but may have experienced other forms of abuse or trauma, for instance, emotional abuse, physical abuse, and the sexual realm becomes a realm, that venue where they can express some of their feelings or develop a sense, a perceived sense of power and control. I could just tell you real briefly of an individual I worked with some years ago. When he was in junior high school, he was playing sports, and at that particular time, guys would take showers right after physical education before they went to their next class. And while in the shower with about 10 other guys, they had 10 different stalls, but while he was in the shower, some of the other guys started making fun of the size of his penis.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was very shaming and embarrassing for that individual. And this individual, imagine when that sort of thing takes place, guys would go back in the hall and would talk about this guy. Yeah, did you see the size of this guy's penis? And then it got to girls. Some of the girls heard about it. Imagine what a guy would experience knowing that other males and even females in the school had gotten information about the size of his penis. It was very embarrassing and shaming. Later on in life, this guy just never really worked those issues, but later on he began to engage in behavior that involved exhibitionism. And one of the things that he started engaging in as a young man is exposing himself.
Wow.
And as he processed and did the work, one of the things that we were able to work on and allow him to work on, he was able to say that when he would expose himself, action and the response of women gave him a perceived sense of power and control, because the average female would probably, when she sees a guy, he walks up to her, open his clothes of some kind, and exposes his penis to her, the average female would probably respond in startlization or shock or may even scream. Well, in his mind, when the female responded that way, he took it as, wow, they saw how big my penis was, and that was their reaction. But it wasn't about how big his penis was. It was his behavior that caused that sense of reaction from a female, because they weren't expecting that. But in his mind, because he had been abused emotionally about the size of his penis, he began to look at that as women respond that way because I have a big penis.
Wow.
The other thing to be mindful of is that sexual abuse also creates distortions. And what you just heard me explain was a distortion that this guy had. Nobody told him his penis was big. He developed that distortion thinking, based on their response, that they were responding that way because of the size of his penis being so large. No one had ever told him he had a large distortion, was connected to his abuse of being made shame and made fun of while he was in junior high school. And
mm-hmm.
That's just a sort of far-fetched example of some of the types of experience that can play a part in people developing unhealthy coping skills. And that's what we refer to the different addictions and the different compulsive behaviors. They're unhealthy coping responses, because the person with an addiction, that behavior for them serves a purpose, however distorted, however unhealthy it may be. For them, it serves a purpose. And so we try to get people to find other healthier ways to get that need met without engaging in that compulsive or offensive behavior.
And, I mean, you're doing awesome. You're segueing us right into the recovery process. What are some of those ways do you all try to help individuals cope? And what does that recovery process look like? You know, what does that look like?
It may vary for many individuals. For particularly individuals who have sexual addictive behavior, compulsive behavior, or even offensive behavior, sexual offensive behavior, a large percentage of those individuals have been sexually abused themselves. And so one of the things that has been really impactful is to help that client to do some work around his own, his or her own abuse, because many times they minimize individuals with sexual addictive or compulsive or offensive behaviors. They tend to minimize their behaviors. And when you allow them to do work around their own abuse and begin to look at the impact that that abuse had on them and how it affected them, then they develop a sense of victim empathy. They know what the victim feels like now because they've been able to go back and look at their own victimization. And too many times people with compulsive sexual behaviors or sexual offensive behaviors don't get opportunities to do work around their own trauma. So they don't develop what we sort of refer to as victim empathy. They can't see what their behavior is doing to others as hurtful, harmful, in those ways, because they never really got in touch with how negatively impacted their own abuse was. So that's the steps that we take. We do support groups. We do things like relapse prevention worksheets and relapse prevention groups, help them to develop what we call ACRs, which is an acronym for new adaptive coping responses. So it's okay to want to feel empowered. It's okay to want to feel in control, but it's important that they find safe ways and appropriate ways to experience that sense of empowerment.
Okay. Demetria, did you have any questions before I ask my next question?
I just wondered, does a sex addict realize that they have a problem? I know they might have been engaged in narcissistic behavior, not the best behavior, but do they think they have an addiction?
Again, I'm going to refer back to the addiction model. How mm-hmm. many people have been alcoholics for years but say, I don't have a problem, I just drank on the
right.
weekend,
I have drank during
the weekend, what have you. And basically, that alcoholic is saying, I go to work every day, I'm able to do this, I'm able to do that. So they don't see that behavior as problematic. Mm-hmm. Very much like with a sex addict, they're able to be functional in many areas of their life until the behavior progressively deteriorates and begins to cause problems.
Mm-hmm.
Problems
mm-hmm.
in relationships, problems on their job, maybe getting arrested or being arrested for solicitation of prostitution or masturbating in the public or engaging in some offensive behaviors. There's a French term that we use that's been termed, it's called frottinism, frottage. It's where, you know, sometimes people are rub up against someone that they may be attracted to, and when they rub up to the person identifies and says, hey, what are you doing? They say, oh, I'm sorry, I accidentally bumped into you. But that person was actually bumping into them for sexual arousal and pleasure. So when these behaviors become progressively deteriorating, that's when people start having to seek treatment. But for the most part, unless it's really starting to impact their lives in a negative way where they're unable to sleep at night, because they're on the computer till 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, so you know, many of them will go for years without ever acknowledging or calling it as sexual addiction.
Wow, I mean, this topic, I tell you, it really requires a little bit more discussion, you know, around that issue, just about the recovery phase. And so, I thank you anyway for taking time out to come and, you know, talk to us. I know you have a really busy schedule, but I hope that at some point you can come back and maybe we can give you just the, you know, full 30 minutes, or I don't know how we can figure out a way to just give you some more time to really explain to us about some of the treatments, the treatment that's out there and available to folks. Even about the 12-step programs that are out there and available to folks. You know, so I'm hoping we can maybe arrange that time somewhere in the near future. And I just want to say thank you for, you know, coming on to give us some clarification.
I really appreciate it, and thank you for having me. I just want to say one quick thing is that
go ahead.
There is such shame and embarrassment associated with them, that many people probably seek help, but they have a lot of shame and embarrassment from the various sexual addictions. So maybe if people can talk about it more and reduce that shame level, they get the help that they need.
Thank you so much. Folks, tune in on next Tuesday. Again, this is Ministry Along the Way. Have a great day.